Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Cutting the Curd has been brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius. The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training in the heart of France. For more information, visit academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com.
You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My guest today is Ken Scovrin, who is the owner of Darien Cheese and Fine Foods. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And so we're continuing. We're continuing our monger series, our cheesemonger series. We had one previous episode with Greg Blaze, who is the current cheese buyer and cheese kind of guy extraordinaire at Eataly.
Okay.
And so yeah, we're kind of taking some time to explore the profession of cheesemongering.
Wonderful. Good.
And so who better to talk to than you, who's been a cheesemonger for a really long time. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into the biz?
And sure. My late brother-in-law, Steve Wasik, which is was the owner of Wasik's Cheese Shop in Wellesley, Massachusetts, was my mentor 39 years ago. He was dating my sister and would bring over
That's convenient.
Bring over cheesy comestibles for the weekend and while they were dating, and he got me, you know, turned on to cheese basically. And I would go to the place in which he worked, and it was a great store with sawdust on the floor and wheels of cheese piled to the ceiling, and it was really intriguing and kind of hooked me right off the bat. So.
And what kind of cheeses was he selling back then?
In the day, you know, a lot of Switzerland cheeses, Emmentalers, Gruyères, things like that, Danish Fontina. In those days, there was a whole line of Danish cheeses like Samso, Tybo, Fontina, Esrum, you know, things that we don't really see too much of anymore. But the reality was those were the staples at that time. Jarlsberg was a gourmet cheese.
Right. Yeah, no, it was a totally different landscape.
Absolutely. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. And so I think we were chatting a little bit before the show. You said you were 15 when you started working in
That's
cheese.
That's correct. Yes. It was how many years ago now? But 15, I actually had to start working. I had to start and had need some income and went for my working papers and started in the store and, you know, kind of just turning wheels of brie and packing cottage cheese and, you know, flipping eggs and all that kind of stuff. So it was a, you know, just the first kind of job that I ever had is really what it comes down to. So.
And where was that? Where was
it? It was in Greenwich, Connecticut. It was part of a franchise called Shoe Shop International.
Okay.
And it started at the New York World's Fair. And when it was in its heyday, it had about 70 stores across the country.
Wow.
And that the Greenwich store on Greenwich Avenue was the home store, which was the training ground for prospective franchisees to go and learn, you know, how to be a cheesemonger and how to run their cheese business and learn about cheeses and so forth. So.
That's really fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I honestly had no idea that that's how that shop came about. So the World's Fair was in what year?
Was it 67 or something like that? 67. I think it was, yeah.
That's like the big globe that you drive past, that's you right. know, on exactly. your way to the
Flushing,
airport.
That's right. Yeah. By Shea Stadium one side and then the globe on the other. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Wow. So there was a business called Cheese Shop International that was sort of born of that and the interest, I'm sure, that people had in European cheeses.
Right. A family by the name of the Hearn family actually had a really high-end grocery butter and egg store on Fulton Street. In New York, and the store dated back to the 1800s, actually.
And that was Fulton Street in Manhattan or
yes,
Brooklyn?
Okay, in Manhattan, I believe. And one of the grandsons started, you know, this idea of, you know, a cheese shop, and they started in Greenwich. It started on the Post Road, and then the New York World's Fair happened, and then there was much more exposure. Much more cheese came into the country at that time because of the World's Fair, and they were showing cheeses there from all various countries, and they saw this opportunity to expand the marketplace, and so they were import distributors as well as retailers. And then they decided that this idea of the franchise would be a great, you know, business kind of model. They were the first cheese shops really in the country, if you will.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I mean, well, that's why I do this show. Right. You just totally taught me something that cool. I had no idea about. I feel like that's part of America's cheese lineage, you know.
Absolutely.
Very important
Without
part of
a
it.
Doubt. Yeah.
And so where were the stores located? 70 stores.
We had stores throughout the country. You know, they're going to be in areas which are a little bit more affluent. You know, there was a Beverly Hills cheese shop, which is a very famous cheese shop still.
And that was originally one of these shops?
One of the franchises,
oh,
absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Uh-huh.
Cheese Shop of Concord in Massachusetts. You know, they're a big Northeast group of stores, big West Coast, down in Florida a bit. Texas, we even had a cheese shop in Texas, you know. So,
wow.
Believe it or not. So... Yeah, so it was, you know, and then it was the heyday. That was when that was flush, you know. And then, and the thing about it was, you know, the thing about the cheese industry, and it kind of took a dip for a while because the people that bought those stores, you know, they got a little older. They either closed the store or they tried to sell it, and it kind of ran down or whatever. And so then a lot of them went out of business, and then there was like a big kind of a glut of not a lot of cheese stores, you know, for a period of time there. And, you know, and now look at what's happening. I mean, it's kind of interesting how
it's
many
kind of rebounding.
Great stores, exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in New York City alone, I mean, I don't know if you see the same thing in Connecticut, but, you know, I think, you know, now compared with 10 years ago, there's probably triple the amount of cheese shops in New York City.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And good stores, too. You know, that's the great part, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it just strikes me as very interesting because right now, I mean, the American Cheese Society has launched their certified cheese professional program.
Yes.
And that's, to me, that was kind of like a new idea, you know, and to think that, this, Cheese Shop International was not only, you know, starting franchises, but was actually training people in the job of cheesemongering.
That's right.
Back in the 70s or the 80s.
In the late 60s.
Exactly. I mean,
right.
That's really incredible.
Right. Exactly. You know, it is. And, you know, it's an interesting thing what's happened. And when they started this this cheese training, this program for the cheese professionals now, mm-hmm. I was contacted and asked to be a part of the program. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting endeavor. And at that time, it was pretty much strictly a textbook program, if you will. You know, it was a lot of questions and answers and stuff, you know, textbook type stuff. But it really was no hands-on, you know, experience as far as it goes. And that was a drawback for me because, if anything, I'm not a textbook person. I'm a hands-on person. And so when I posed that question and they said there really wasn't a segment of that for that, you know, particular test yet, I kind of shied away because I just, you know, it wasn't speaking to me because, you know, you're not a great bread maker or wine maker or chef, you know, without using your hands and getting involved with the product is really what it comes down to. So, but I'd love to see the test and the program now and see what the curriculum was, and I'm sure I could learn from it. I think it's probably a good thing.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it is a good thing. I think it's like an attempt to sort of formalize and legitimize right. The craft of cheesemongering. But I'm kind of old school with you. I helped a little bit, with some of the questions for the test.
Oh, wow.
And it was an interesting process, but I agree with you that, so much of the job, and that was actually one of the most difficult parts of trying to think of questions for the test, so much of the job does come from hands-on experience, and so much of it is subjective.
Right.
Because it's really about your taste, your touch, your
exactly.
eyes, your ears, your nose.
That's right.
I guess not so much your ears. If your cheese is making noise, that's trouble. Yeah. That's
no comment.
Bad. Anyways, we'll leave that there. But I feel like that's just you've hit the nail on the head. And I feel like that, to me, that's one of the biggest beauties of cheesemongering right. is it's a humble job. You
Absolutely.
Know, you really have to just handle
Chop
the product.
Chop that wood and carry the water, it's kind of what it's all about, and yeah, I think that's what separates the good cheesemongers from the bad ones. That is really what it comes down to. You got to be willing to love the product. You got to love the product, and you got to be willing to do the work because it's a lot of hard work. When we would train franchisees, they were all starry-eyed when they came in. It's like, oh wow, we're gonna have a cheese shop. This is so glamorous. We're gonna eat cheese and drink wine and have a blast. And then they're in it for a couple of months, and they're like, wow, this is work. It's like, yeah, no kidding. So it separates the whatever.
The rind from the paste,
exactly.
as it were. No.
That's exactly it. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. Well, yeah, and it's like, welcome to the world of retail.
Yeah,
that's
it. It's a grind a bit, kind
it's of not
thing.
Easy.
That's not easy, that's for sure. But
yeah.
It's awesome. I'm still doing it after 39 years, so I still dig it.
Exactly. Well, and so I feel like, I don't know, what do you think about, so somebody like you could truly call yourself an expert, I feel, after 39 years in the business.
I'm the ultimate enthusiast. Experts are finite. I'm infinite.
Okay, there you go. There you go. I like that. I like that a lot. But I think that, a lot of I feel like in the food industry in general in the United States,
right.
we've got the Food Network, we've got Top Chef, we've got all this stuff, and it's all kind of like based on this brash, like getting in there and knowing your stuff and flaunting your
right.
know-how.
Right.
Maybe sometimes there is just genuine, there are genuine prodigies who have this talent and it's just kind of inherent in them. But I feel like most of us kind of just have to work at it. And
yeah.
I feel like what your experience in the cheese biz is maybe a little bit similar to how people would start in Europe, where you right. really work and learn the profession.
Absolutely. Yeah, a genuine apprentice. I didn't get on the counter for a full year. Is really what it comes down to. There was a lot of behind the scenes work. You have to really learn how to work with the product, how to understand the product, how to cut it properly, how to present it to the customer when the truck's unloaded in the back door, how to look at this order and say, this is good cheese from bad cheese. And, so there's a lot that goes behind it. And then you got to get your lingo down, kind of things. So.
Oh, yeah. We can talk more about that later.
Yeah,
I feel like you've got some good vocab. I feel that's a whole other, well, maybe we can just get into it now. That's
sure.
a whole other art form. I feel like, not too long ago in the New York Times, they had that little write-up in the dining section about
right.
cheese descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a nice article because it's something that I definitely put a lot of focus on in my shop. And I feel like whether it's actually on a sign or whether you're describing it,
right.
your cheese to a customer, it's really important the words that you
Sure, absolutely.
Choose.
I think it comes from within, right? It's, I think people that are generally successful in this industry and that, are doing this because it's an unusual line of work, have a passion about cheese. I think that in their heart and their soul, they generally feel it and they really love it. And so a lot of it just kind of pours out, if you will, but me, it's a lot of talk, kind of thing. I'm a big, BS artist, but I enjoyed it and it's engaging. I like engaging the customer. I like turning them on to something new. It's fun. And they get a kick out of it and it's what makes them come back to our store as well. It's all part of the program. And then signage as well. I use the signage on the outside of the store a lot to get them in the door,
mm-hmm.
Cause we're in a shopping center. There's lots of traffic walking around. So, rope them in, get them in the store and then start talking to them and mainly start sampling cheese to them. That's really what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
That's the key. In the old day when people would walk into a cheese store, they would come in and they would look at us and they'd look at the big pile of cheese and they go, oh my God. And they turn around and start looking at the crackers because it was like, I know those. I can deal with that.
I can read that box.
Exactly. So, the first thing we would do is we'd get that old cheese plane out and we'd take a slice of a piece of cheese. We'd always have one ready and whip the slice out on them and say, hey, how's it going? Have a taste today. So that was the icebreaker, you know, kind of thing. And once they taste, then all of a sudden a different part of the brain starts to work, and they're tasting and their taste buds are going. And it's like, oh, wow, that's good. You know, that tastes like this or it tastes like that. And so you engage them. And so you start sampling on a bunch of things kind of thing, and that's how the whole thing kind of evolves. But it's really – it is all based around taste, right? I mean, you know, it's kind of getting them – engaging them and then sharing the, sharing it with them and letting them taste it, enjoy it. And
exactly.
Have kind of a vocabulary about it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, so – tell us about your shop. I mean, I've been there once, right. And it took me way too long to get there. but it's a very beautiful shop. So
Thank
if you could like give people a, you know, mental picture of what your shop is like, that'd be great.
Sure.
And actually, can you tell us, so the name Darien Cheese and Fine
Darien
Foods.
Darien Cheese and Fine Foods, yeah.
And about the location and then
we're
the shop itself.
We're in Darien, Connecticut, and we're in a place called Goodwives Shopping Plaza. The Stepford Wives were filmed there. I don't know what that means, but in any case, it's a Fairfield County town, and it's an affluent community, and certainly, you know, those were the areas that were originally targeted for cheese stores because, you know, people were making, you know, decent money and they can afford specialty
cheeses. And they probably had been to Europe and had tasted things like that.
Exactly right. They were more open to their educated, you know, crowd, and they were more open to these experiences, if you will. So, you know, the original footprint of the cheese shops when, you know, from the first stores, they were, you know, warm environments. They were lots of wood. As far as it goes, and you know, we would use marble and stones and different elements to display the cheeses and keep it as close to the, you know, the earth as possible, kind of thing. Give it a real natural environment, if you will. And so, when I did my store over about 6 years ago, I kind of took it a little bit step further, and I kind of styled it my store after an alpine chalet. So I'm using kind of post and beam shelving. It's a wooden ceiling. It's kind of bulky and it's a little bit, you know, macho in a sense. But it's a great for kind of backdrop for these cheeses. And so when you walk into the store on the right hand side, immediately there's earthenware crocks with beautiful display of olives. You walk down a little further, there's a counter display that, you know, takes me an hour to make every day. Cause it, to me, it's sculpture and art, you know, food is art and it's all part of it. And then our back wall is, you know, it's about 30 feet of, by about 12 feet high of bulk, you know, large format cheeses, Gruyères, Emmentalers, Cheddars, and things like that. We used to sell bulk bean coffee in the store. We were the first stores actually in the country to kind of launch bulk bean coffee because it was a good format for that. But now with all the Starbucks and all the people doing roasted and all that kind of stuff, we got out of it. But then on the other flip side, we sell, you know, things that go with the cheeses. We sell June Taylor's beautiful products from Berkeley, California, her preserves and conserves and marmalades. We sell extra virgin olive oils and vinegars. And the whole philosophy and the idea about the products that we carry with cheeses or the shelf items are as close to the earth as possible, not manipulated, not trend, but, you know, tradition, authentic and real taste experiences. Because, you know, we feel that that's, you know, the kind of the, what – those are the bones of our industry, if you will, and we want to, you know, support those and preserve those and give people an authentic experience.
Yeah, and when you taste a cheese that tastes like that, it really, yeah, that's like,
transcending.
That's what makes, you know, it click for a lot of people.
Exactly.
I know that's what made it click for me, you know, I was just kind of like, wait a second.
Yeah, exactly. Raw milk, yeah.
It's
like,
yeah.
It's like traditionally made.
Exactly. Little drug, you know,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, wait a second, I haven't had that before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah, it was the same for me.
Well, what about your product selection? So we're talking about, you know, the old days when you had your first job and, and I feel like, well, so how do you choose your product selection? Let's just do that because that's complex.
Now versus then or just now?
I guess now versus then. Yeah,
sure. Well, you know, it was always what was available and, you know, what was good and what we felt was good. And, you know, in the beginning, it was all new. I mean, so Jarlsberg was a gourmet cheese for us. You know, it was new. It was different, you know. We were kind of always, you know, the motto was, serving the world's finest cheeses that you could obtain, you know, what was coming into this country, what was available. And then, you know, the better the selection got and, you know, the owner of the store and the buyer, the son of the owner of the store was a buyer and a very, smart, articulate, and he had an amazing palate. He lived out in California for a while and he got to really know wines and came back home and he ran the store. And he went to Europe with John Cieno and they started bringing in, you know, real traditional French cheeses. Mm. So the unpasteurized Brie de Meaux, Camembert, Emmett de Chambertin, when it was raw milk, Poiss, you know,
those
all
were
of these.
Days.
Those were the days,
yeah.
Without a doubt. And then when that happened, it was kind of like, you know, you just stepped off the planet. It's like, whew, you know, it's like, wow, this just, it blows your mind. I mean, it just, you know, so here we are selling all these kind of, you know, larger production pasteurized cheeses. And then we stepped into this, you know, unpasteurized raw milk, you know, soft ripened, sexy French cheeses. And it was just a whole nother world. I mean, and, you know, so it was like, you know, you just kept on getting thirstier and hungrier for more of this stuff. It's like, you know, this is incredible. And so we, you know, these guys would go out, you know, throughout the world and to England and find farmhouse cheeses and to Italy and find, you know, great, you know, Italian cheeses. And so it was all part of the evolution of the industry. And, you know, well, and they started to make things available. And, you know, it's, I guess life is a journey. And so, and I guess we all seek to find, you know, more truth in life and better quality of life, and as we go, hopefully go through this journey. And so mine has been to become closer to the earth and more authentic and less manipulated and stick to the bones and the truth of our industry. And I believe that, you know, raw milk is the truth of cheese, and I think that we should put things into our body as, you know, as natural and as real as possible. And I think it's a health issue, and I think it's a, you know, obviously it's a taste issue as well. You know, so that's kind of where we're at. We're selecting things that are real. We're not selecting things that are trendy and this and that. It's all about just pure, real, keep it simple and, you know, enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And so I feel like, so we were talking, I feel like I'm cheating because we got to talk a little bit before the show, but we were just talking a little bit about the balance between European and American and how some of that is starting to shift, because you were saying now some of those European cheeses are actually quite difficult to get.
Absolutely.
If you're looking for authenticity, you know?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't get soft, real soft ripened, you know, imported cheeses that are made from raw milk anymore. There's, you know, they have to be a certain age, 60 days, and if they have a certain moisture value to them, they're not allowed in the country. I mean, I worked very hard to keep Brebeuf-Chon in this country for a long period of time, and the Food and Drug finally said, look, you know, you can't bring this in anymore. You know, it's, so those cheeses, we're losing them. We lost them, and then I taste one in your store today. That's raw milk. It's made in Tennessee, and it just blew my mind. It was just, you know, it was really, you know, Revolution, you know, made in the U.S., and it wasn't a good version. It was an awesome version, you know. So I was, you know, it was an amazing experience for me because that was one of my favorite cheeses, the Jewel of the Alps, right? And so now we have it, you know, in the States, and we have somebody making it in Tennessee, and it's just, you know, it kind of opens it, you know, here's, you know, it's part of the evolution. It's another step, you know, as far as it goes. And it opened up a big door for me today because, you know, you're sad when you can't sell things like that and you can't have things like that. And you remember all of these great cheeses and then all of a sudden you can't have them anymore. You know, it kind of hurts, you know, as far as it goes, you know. So to now have sources here and not have to go through all the trouble with Food and Drug and all that other stuff. I mean, those are your huge hurdles. And so it's a breath of fresh air. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like trying to sell cheese with your hands tied behind your back,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
With not being able to have access to the stuff that you want.
Exactly.
Well, because we were yakking at my store and we were just selling, we were tasting too much cheese, we're actually out of time for the show today.
Worries.
I hope you'll come back to
I'd
be
love
on
to.
A future episode.
My pleasure.
But thank you so much. This has been a chat with Ken Scoverin, who's the owner of Darien Cheese and Fine Foods. And if our listeners want to find you, do you have a website, Facebook, anything?
Facebook.
Phone
Let's
number?
Do Facebook. The website's the lamest, you know, it's when they had square wheels, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we're in Darien, Connecticut, and it's dariencheese.com. And then there's, you know, go to Darien Cheese Facebook. We're there, and there's some nice shots of the store, and get a feel for what we're all about, you know, visually before you come on in. That was the idea. And we're always posting kind of when we cut up a special wheel of cheese, we put it up on Facebook. So, you know, we'd love more friends for sure. So that'd be great.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ken.
You.
It's
thank
been
you.
A real pleasure. And we will be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. When you come to learn at the Academy, we instill our love for cheese, our expertise, and our experience so that you can support artisanal producers, impeccably care for the fine cheeses you carry, and serve your customers with skill and enthusiasm. We integrate hands-on practice, formal instruction, and classroom discussion in all of our courses. The Academy's programs are offered at the Mons Fromagerie in the heart of France, where cheese undergoes affinage and cheeses are received, prepared, and shipped. Several Mons retail shops are nearby. The surrounding countryside is the home to producers whose excellent cheeses are cared for by the Mons team.
the Moulins cheese business has more than 50 years experience caring for and teaching about cheese in France, a country known as the source of some of the world's greatest cheeses, deepest cheese tradition, and the highest level of technological research and rigor in cheese making and ripening. The Academy has been recognized by the American Cheese Society as the first approved education center for those preparing for the Certified Cheese Professional exam. Enroll now for Essential Foundations for Cheese Professionals or Affinage, the Art and Science of Maturing Cheese. For more information, visit www.academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com. Certified Cheese Professional is a registered trademark of the American Cheese Society.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.